I'd like to read to you from Swami Ramdas's writings tonight. This one is entitled Man's Supreme Quest. Man's quest lies in his researches into the realm of the soul, spirit, and God. Deeper he dives into the abyss of truth, more wonderful grows his experience. He finds worlds are involved in worlds. And as he progresses inward, subtler and subtler are the planes of existence he meets. As he passes through them, he beholds supernatural visions of divine forms, hears the sweetest strains of celestial music, senses the intoxicating fragrance of heavenly aroma, is dazzled with the flashes of immortal radiance, experiences an unutterable rapture of pure bliss, and at last, reaching the utmost confines of the soul and the inner worlds, plunges into the infinite expanse of ecstatic silence and immutable peace, wherein everything is naught, wherefrom everything emanates. Further journey ceases here, because now the traveler and the destination have resolved into one, as the river merges into the ocean. This transcendent experience makes the soul realize not merely an inner unity of all life and existence, but also the absolute oneness of all visible and invisible worlds of manifestation. Now he feels both his physical and psychical being in all its aspects is utterly divine, as also the vast phenomena of nature before him. The ecstasy and light of the divine fill every pore of his body, and every atom of his physical frame responds to the thrills of delight, originating from his immortal spirit, which is now one with the cosmic soul, and the great basic ultimate Godhead, who is all-inclusive and all-transcendent. Love now blossoms in his heart like a full-blown flower. The world is the playground of his liberated spirit. Peace and freedom passeth all description. Childlike innocence pervades his entire being. Divine splendor illumines his face. He rolls in ineffable ecstasy. He knows he is immortal.
That's really the whole thing right there. Saint Anne or Hannah from Hebrew of David's house was the mother of the Virgin Mary and grandmother of Jesus Christ, according to Christian and Islamic tradition. Mary's mother is not named in the canonical Gospels or the Quran, and her name and that of her husband, Joachim, come only from the New Testament Apocrypha. And the story bears a similarity of that of Samuel, whose mother, Hannah, had also been childless, although Hannah received little attention in the Western Church prior to the 12th century. Dedications to Hannah in the Eastern Church occur as early as the 6th century. In the Eastern Orthodox churches and Eastern Catholic churches, she is revered as Hannah. In the Eastern Orthodox tradition, Hannah is ascribed as the forebearer of God and the birth of Mary and the dedication of Mary to the temple are celebrated as the 12 great festivals. Varying theologians have believed either that Joachim was Anne's only husband. And then I'm going to go down here to Blessed Anne Catherine Emmerich, who is German, and she was born in 1774 and left the body in 1824. Was a Roman Catholic Augustine Carinus, regular of Wendesheim. She had the stigmatic or the wounds of Christ on her body. She was a mystic and a visionary and an ecstatic. And we learn from her many revelations that come about the life before Jesus and the life of Jesus that she received in ecstasy. And she was beatified by Pope John Paul II in 2004, I believe. And she has a beautiful description here about Anne and her husband, Joachim, who at the time of the birth of Mary, or the conception of Mary, that is called the Immaculate Conception. Sometimes people get it confused that the Immaculate Conception is of Jesus, but actually it's of Mary. And immaculate meaning in this case that it was done in pure oneness with God, that there wasn't driven by lust or other kinds of lower desire, but rather it was something that was sublime. And after going through a very difficult, long, dark period for both Anne and Joachim, Joachim had taken an offering to the temple, and because they were childless, his offering was refused, which disturbed him greatly. And so he went up to be with his flocks. He was a relatively wealthy man of the time and didn't tell his wife where he was going, and he's gone for 5 months. And his wife was at home, and her maid was giving her a hard time and telling her that her house had been cursed and that she must have done something terrible in order not to have a child, and would berate her in this way. And finally, she sent the servant away back to her house where she had come from. And she prayed deeply to God. And she was lifted up into ecstasy, and she was told to go to Jerusalem, to the temple. Joachim was out with his fields at the same time. He had a revelation from an angel, and he was also told to go to the temple. And so, unbeknownst to each other, they both headed toward the temple, although Anne was told that she would meet her husband there. And so this is the description. It was a warning from on high that had led Joachim into the holy place. And it was by a similar inspiration that he was brought into a subterranean passage which belonged to the consecrated part of the temple and ran under it and under the golden gate. I have been told what the meaning and origin of this passage where the temple was built and also what it was used for, but I have no real clear recollection of this. Some religious observance relating to the blessing and reconciliation of the unfruitful was, I think, connected with this passage. In certain circumstances, people were brought into it for the rites of purification, expiation, absolution, and the like. Joachim was led by priests near the slaughtering place through a little door into the passage. The priest turned back, but Joachim continued along this passage, which gradually sloped downwards. Anna had also come to the temple with her maidservant, who was carrying the doves for sacrifice in wicker baskets. She had handed over her offering and had revealed to the priest that she had been bidden by an angel to meet her husband under the golden gate. I now saw that she was led by priests, accompanied by some venerable women, among whom I think was the prophetess Anna, through an entrance on the other side into the consecrated passage, where her companions left her. I had a very wonderful view of what this passage was like. Joachim went into a little door. The passage sloped downwards and was at first narrow, but became broader afterwards. The walls were of glistening gold and green, and a reddish light shone from above. I saw beautiful pillars like twisted trees and vines. And after passing through a third of the passage, Jochim came to a place in the midst of which stood a pillar in the form of a palm tree, with hanging leaves and fruits. Here he was met by Anna, radiant with happiness. They embraced each other with holy joy, and held and each other told the other their good tidings. They were in a state of ecstasy and enveloped in a cloud of light. I saw this light issuing from a great host of angels who were carrying the appearance of a high shining tower and hovering over the heads of Anna and Jochim. The form of this tower was the same as I see in the pictures from the Litany of the Blessed Virgin of the Tower of David and the Tower of Ivory and so forth. I saw that this tower seemed to disappear between Anna and Jochim and were enveloped in a glory of brightness. I understood that, as a result of the grace here given, the conception of Mary was as pure as all conceptions would have been but for the fall. I had at the same time an indescribable vision. The heavens opened above them, and I saw the joy of the Holy Trinity and of the angels, and their participation in the mysterious blessing here bestowed on Mary's parents. Anna and Jochim returned, praising God, to the exit under the golden gate. Towards the end, the passage sloped upwards. They came into a kind of chapel, under a beautiful and high arch, where many lights were burning. Here they were received by priests who led them away. The part of the temple above, which was the hall of the Sanhedrin, lay over the middle of the subterranean passage. Above this of it were, I think, dwellings of priests whose duty it was to look after the vestments. Jochim and Anna now came to a kind of bay at the outermost edge of the temple hill, overlooking the valley of Josaphat, where the path could no longer go straight on, but branched either to the left or to the right. After they had visited another priest's house, I saw Jochim and Anna and their servants starting on their journey home. On their arrival at Nazareth, Jochim had a joyful meal, gave food to many people, and distributed generous alms. I saw how full he and Anna were of joy and fervor and gratitude to God when they had thought of his compassion towards them. I often saw them praying together with tears. It was explained to me here that the Blessed Virgin was begotten by her parents in holy obedience and complete purity of heart, and that thereafter they lived together in continence in the greatest devoutness and fear of God. I was at the same time clearly instructed how immeasurably the holiness of children was encouraged by the purity, chastity, and continence of their parents, and by their resistance to all unclean temptations, and how continence after conception preserves the fruit of the womb from many sinful impulses. In general, I was given an overflowing abundance of knowledge about the roots of deformity and sin. And so we go a little further back in time than the birth of Jesus with the conception of Mary. And this has wonderful symbolic meaning as well as a wonderful story about how husband and wife can live together, how there can be such a spiritual light and spiritual presence between the two, and how it uplifts them. And what is conceived in such a light is of that great purity and that great substance of God. God is the term that we use in order to describe this brilliance that really no word can describe. No words at all can even come close when you awaken to this great light, to this great presence. You feel as if before you were sleepwalking. You may have heard the words, you may have taken it in to some extent, but you didn't really understand, you didn't really experience what it was that was being talked about. When you do, then you can read these words, and as you read these words and these descriptions, you're lifted up into this higher light, into this higher way of knowing about this world. What we all yearn for in the deepest of our hearts is to reunite soul with spirit, to become imbued with these qualities that are of God's nature, the bliss, the joy, the light, the peace, the everythingness of everything that is of a higher nature. This is all that we want. This is all that we really strive for, but people get confused. They get into a body and then they get absorbed into the things of the world. They become so preoccupied with it all that they can completely forget who and what they are, where they come from, what the true purpose is for their incarnation here. This is what we have come to orient our minds towards. Because in the beginning, all we have is our mind. And so we must have a mental conception of what it is that we are trying to achieve. So we read the scriptures. We read the descriptions of saints. We feel the inspiration, and yet this isn't enough. This is only just the beginning. And then we begin to make the mind more inward. We orient it towards things of the spirit instead of things of the world. But being householder yogis in particular, we are still surrounded by the things of the world. So the preoccupations of the world come back to us once again. And this is our great test in life. This is something that I wrote on 12/24, Make Haste. It says in the Gospel according to Luke, when the shepherds heard from the angels that a new light was coming into the world, and they came with haste to where the Christ child was to be born. When revelations come and angels are heard on high, when we know that the kingdom of heaven is at hand, do we make haste to the goal? The great ones do. They hurry, they run to the goal. When people hear about the good news, most hear it with vague indifference, or with perhaps a distant hope. There are a few who see the light and they respond. At first, they have great enthusiasm, but like a shepherd who is torn between going to see the newborn babe, but turns back to take care of his flock, afraid of what he might lose, or what others will think of him. Just so the few who start the journey to the Christ get distracted and respond to old attachments in some way or get dissuaded from pursuing their goal. Jesus spoke of these varied ways of receiving the word, and he spake many things unto them in parables, saying, Behold, a sower went forth to sow, and when he sowed, some seeds fell by the wayside, and the fowls came and devoured them up. Some fell by stony places, where they had not much earth, and forthwith they sprung up, because they had no deepness of earth, and when the sun was up, they were scorched, and because they had no root, they withered away. And some fell among the thorns, and the thorns sprung up and choked them, but others fell into good ground, and brought forth fruit, some 100-fold, some 60-fold, some 30-fold. Those who have ears to hear, let them hear. There are a few spiritual geniuses who have single-mindedly pursued the great goal. Paramahansa Yogananda, Swami Ramdas, and Mother Hamilton all had that genius. They led the way for the rest of us, those who have the wit to follow. And so these are the tests that come along to us, is what will we do with them? Will we focus exclusively on this world? We are told to live in this world, but not of the world. Certainly we have to live in this world. We have to clothe ourselves, to feed ourselves, to put a roof over our heads, to have shelter. And we get involved in this world. So we are definitely in this world. But to be not of this world means that we are of God, that God comes first, that we put our spiritual realization first on the docket, on the agenda. I love Gandhi's saying when he said that, he said, "I'm so busy today, I had to meditate twice as long." Now, who thinks like that? Only a great soul does, a Mahatma. And when we do, when we put God first, what do we get? In the beginning, it is true. It can be a great struggle because the things of the old keep calling to us, keep drawing us back into the world. But if we resist those things, if we put aside that time for our pursuit of realization only, and put aside everything of the world, put aside all the other considerations, all the fears, all the preoccupations, and really put our minds upon the divine, a new world begins to open up before us. It is not something of imagination. It is beyond imagination. It is beyond the reality that we experience in this physical realm. One of the things that greatly stunned me at first was that how visceral, how physical, how tactile these inner experiences could be, that it as if to prove to my material mind that the things of spirit were more powerful, were more present. We sometimes think of the higher worlds as being vague and illusory, and this is only true because our mind has not yet accustomed itself to really delving into these higher worlds, these inner places. In fact, for some people, when they start getting lifted up into these experiences, it is so powerful, it takes them by great surprise. And they actually turn away from it because it feels like it's too much. Deep inside, it awakens the fears, who will I be? What will I be? I don't know. Where will I be taken to? And then there are the other considerations. What will others think? And what if I abandon those duties that are of this world? But whatever is true, whatever is right, God will support us in this. If it is to have children in great purity, such as Anna and Joachim are described as having here, surely God will provide everything so that all things are possible, all things can be done. You think of Mary, and just a young girl, just engaged but not yet living with her husband. And this angel comes to her and tells her that she's going to be pregnant. And she asks how that is possible. And God says that the angel says that with God all things are possible. All things are possible. And this has a deep resonance inside of her. She accepts this. She takes it in, and yet she knows that even her life is at risk because if her husband turns her out, she can be stoned for this and killed. And so there's great social censure. You would have to think that people at the time would turn away from her, would ignore her, would see her as unclean, that she had done something terribly wrong, even though she was filled with this birth of a tremendous God-being in all of its purity. But it was a secret that she would have to hold by herself. Who would believe her? Who would understand her? And so it was a secret that she had to carry. Unfortunately, God gave a revelation to her husband-to-be, Joseph, that everything was exactly right, that she had not fallen, she had not gone with another man, nothing of the sort, that she was to give birth to something great, something special. But looking at it from a human standpoint, your heart can go out to her. What a difficult time, even if her husband accepted her. What about his family? What about her family? What about people in the village and how they would react to her? And so it takes great courage. It takes great stamina and tenacity to seek out the path. Mother Hamilton's father, who was American Indian, half American Indian, he said one time to Mother about her guru, Paramahansa Yogananda, he says, "You'd follow that old Indian anywhere." And he was trying to dissuade her from it. And she had been raised Catholic, and her parents were greatly disturbed that when she left the Catholic Church. And one time when Mother was talking to a Catholic priest, she said, "You know, Father, when they put the word Roman in front of Catholic, it lost its universality, because Catholic means universal." And he said, "You know, you're right." In so many ways, the church had lost its way, but there were saints that would come along down through the ages, and they would help to set right the things of the church. They would breathe new inspiration, new light. When Saint Francis came, he loved the concept of the baby Jesus and this idea of celebrating this birth. For many, many hundreds of years, they didn't celebrate Christ's birth at all. It just wasn't thought to be anything. And then there is also a very big notion at the time that Jesus was to come again. So there is no need to form any kind of organization. There is no need to have any formality. It was just to worship God. And what a few recognized at the time was that the second coming wasn't something that was going to happen in an outer sense, but it was an inner sense. Jesus had already said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were," and he was talking to Pontius Pilate at the time, having been arrested, he said, "I would have called on an army and they would have been here. But that's not what it is. My kingdom of heaven is within." But Saint Francis had this great love for this baby Jesus. And so he constructed with some of his disciples this wonderful rustic kind of cave. They put some animals into it. They put an area there for the baby to be put into, a kind of rustic cradle. And they had everything prepared, and they began to worship this. And their love and their fervor, and they sang songs. And as their love grew and this conception of the Christ child came so strongly into their hearts, finally that cradle began to glow with a light. And the light grew so much that there were villagers nearby who saw this light. They thought that a fire had started. And they came running to help put the fire out. And what they saw were these few monks who were in this rustic cave with these animals, with this cradle that had a little bit of straw in it. And there was such a great light there that they all bowed down and they began to worship this. They were in awe of it. This is what devotion can bring to you. Everything happens first in spirit. In the beginning, God was. And there need not be any expression, because everything was contained within that Spirit of God. But God decided to create, and so he sent himself out, and he created, and it was all made up of God stuff. It came first from spirit, and from spirit to thought, and thought to energy, and energy into materiality. And he saw that it was good, and he preserved it. And then, as the natural course of things, because nothing in the relative world of creation exists forever, then he begins to withdraw it back into himself. And as he is going out and he is returning, he seems to oppose himself. But you see, it is all God. That is why Papa could say, the world is God. And the world is exactly as it ought to be. Now we look out with human eyes, and we see problems. We see difficulties. We see deprivation. We see wars. We see all kinds of difficulties. And Papa would not say those things are in concert with the highest divine light. When he's looking at it through his human vision, he would agree with us. Those things are problematic areas. They need to be solved. But he was looking at it through a divine vision, an uplifted vision. And in that, you hear the vibration of the divine consciousness in every atom of space, in every particle, in every place. There is nothing but that divine vibration. This is the Christ Spirit. This is the only begotten Son of God. Because it has particularized itself out through all creation as the firstborn of every creature. And so it is in this physical creation, but it is not of it. It is of the Divine Father, the Father who never entered into creation, even though he created it. He never entered into the delusion of separation. God the Father could never say, I and my Father are one, because God was already the Father. It was already one. But the only begotten Son of God, this Christ Spirit that are particles throughout all creation, this part could say, I and my Father are one. Now, Jesus could say that, the Son of Man could say that, because he had realized it, realized the Great Spirit within himself. And he had come into that consciousness of the Son of God, so much so that he and that Son of God were one and the same. But it says in the beginning of John, to all them who received him, gave he power to become sons of God. You see, it is a calling to all of us. There is none of us that need to be separated. Now, what would be the signs of such a one? When people would come to see Papa Ram Dass, and some of them would express disappointment. And he said, what, am I to be wearing a pair of horns or, you know, having some great light coming from my being that you couldn't deny? He looked like an ordinary human being. And Mataji would say, you all come to the ashram and you see Papa, but that you see him just as a pleasant old man. You don't realize who he is. Because she had been lifted up into that vision. She had been lifted up into that Christ consciousness. And she had seen his divinity spread out all over creation and beyond. It's not Papa in the human sense. It is that Papa in the human sense had risen up and identified with the divine consciousness, and that which was human in him died. Master once said, you cannot have Yogananda consciousness. Besides, I killed Yogananda long ago. He no longer exists. But you can have God consciousness, God within you. And this is the truth. This is the truth. This is what all the great masters have come to teach. This is what Jesus came to awaken in humanity. But people continue to slumber. They continue to sleepwalk through this life. They don't realize what is within them. They look outside of themselves for the treasure. But really, if they were wise, they would look within. And they would go beyond the temptations. They would go beyond the old patterns of the past. They would learn to still their consciousness. Distill their mind. And when their mind would become still, then something would awaken inside of them. That great light, that great love, that great purity. And then you are lifted up into the divine consciousness. The Buddha rightly said, it cannot be described. He said, why do you want to hear about that? Get there. Go there first. and then words will become inadequate. Let us make haste. Let us not dawdle along the way. Surely we live in this world and we have duties to perform because we do live in this world. But we are of God. We are of divine consciousness. And this we should never forget. Never. And so, like this sacred conception that happened, all activity in this world can be divinized, can be lifted up. And we find then that we haven't given up anything except that which is worth giving up. Because what we receive, the joy, the bliss, the light, the revelations of truth, they go beyond anything that we could have in a human sense. And now we live in divine joy, as Papa described, as Mother reading from Papa. We live in that joy, we live in that love. We become that. It's not just an occasional experience. We become that very thing, that very self. And so let us all make haste to the goal and not let anything dissuade us along the way, so that we may be a shining light upon this world and all may be uplifted as well. Isn't that a wonderful way to change this world, one person at a time, one revelation at a time? Many times people look for a savior to come to do the work for them, so that they don't have to lift a finger. They just get lifted along with everybody else. And the evildoers are taken away with, and the righteous are acknowledged. And of course, each one thinks they're the righteous ones. And they don't think they have to do anything. This isn't the truth. We have to strive with all of our strength, with all of our mind, with all of our heart, with all of our spirit. But when we do, God's grace comes in and lifts us up. If we stretch our wings out, there are spiritual currents that will draft us up and up and up, as high as we would like to go, into the blue heavens. This is true. I can tell you from my own experience. If we would but make the effort and make haste. So let us sit for a few minutes in quietness, just to centering our minds upon God alone, opening ourselves, heart, mind, and soul, to be receptive to all them who receive Him, to be receptive to those Christ vibrations. Feel those uplifting currents and know who and what you truly are.